see if, let's start over. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome to the program. Aloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. I guess I still have too many fireworks going off inside my head. We had a great time last night with Molly. This was her first year where she didn't sit there in abject terror. Matter of fact, she loved it. Over here in Decatur, Georgia, is where we wound up with some friends to watch the fireworks. Molly had a great time. I had a good time, too. The only problem I have with 4th of July celebrations, and I was thinking about this last night. Here he goes. When I was a kid, and I would go to parade, well, you know, a kid, a teenager, I'd go to parades or I'd go to 4th of July or whatever, and the celebrations would strike a chord inside of me, obviously put in there by the older people, put in there by my teachers and Sunday school teacher and parents and grandparents and everybody, but it would still strike a chord of, I didn't know it at the time, patriotism. You know, just feeling that warm, fuzzy feeling about us and ours and mine and my country and my, you know, from sea to shining sea and amber waves of grain. You know, Limbaugh screwed up that phrase, from sea to shining sea. He just totally perverted it. But what I noticed last night, in the town square in Decatur, there's a gazebo big enough to hold the Callenwald Arts Orchestra, which is based in an arts center in Atlanta. And they play it. It's probably a 40-member, wouldn't you say, Kathy? About 30 or 40-member orchestra. A pops orchestra, and they played, you know, the Star Spangled Banner and God Bless America and songs like that. Then they had the local Boy Scout troop, or one of the local Boy Scout troops, present the colors. And I used to do that when I was a Boy Scout. You know, I used to present the colors. I would either carry the Ohio flag or the American flag or the Scout flag or what have you. And it was always just so like, oh, God, this is who I am. I love this. Oh, and now... the absolute total, once again, death of innocence. Now, at my age, there shouldn't be any innocence left whatsoever. Oddly and surprisingly to me, there seems to be little tiny puddles of innocence left inside of me. And, you know, I want to do the five-year-old thing and walk up to those puddles and stomp my foot in them and make them disappear. But it was difficult. Did you have that problem, Catherine, when listening?
I'm still having a problem picturing you as a Boy Scout.
Yeah, well, it just, I don't know. And then I watch, of course, Molly, she's 3 weeks away from being three, so she doesn't get the patriotism thing. She tries to boogie to music that you'd hear at the Boston Pops, only this is a local Pops orchestra. She gets up and dances. And then, you know, hundreds, thousands of people, I guess, crammed into the square, Molly waving to everybody as if they were there for her.
Well, what I found interesting about the little band was that they seemed to play a lot more. It was light on the John Philip Sousa and heavy on the Rodgers and Hammerstein.
John Williams, played a lot of John Williams music. Yeah.
A lot of musicals.
Yeah.
From Carousel and
That's
Oklahoma.
True. That's
and
true. Maybe they were feeling the same thing. But damn it all, I wish that feeling were still there. In a way, I don't know, nationalism, I guess, ultimately is not a good thing. Because nationalism leads to jingoism, which leads to invading other countries, you know, for no reason. So, but those little puddles of memories, those little pools that still exist inside of me, longing truly for that innocence, you know? You ever feel that way? Sure you have. Speaking of innocence, joining us in a few minutes would be Elliot Cohen, Dr. Elliot Cohen. He's director of the Institute for Critical Thinking. And he's got a book out, The Last Days of Democracy, How Big Media and Power-Hungry Government Are Turning America into a Dictatorship. He wrote this book along with Bruce Frazier, and we'll be joined by Elliot Cohen. There is nothing, and I just got this the other day, and in scanning through and skimming through, there's nothing in here that you and I, True Seeker, have not talked about. There's nothing in here that you and I really don't know. Well, there's a couple things, a couple of items that Elliot brings up. But we're going to talk to him coming up here in about 25 minutes. And I don't know, maybe just to reinforce what you and I have already discussed many times. But the book is scary. It is scary. The Last Days of Democracy. Maybe that's why I just can't get into the flag waving thing. And very few people, did you notice last night, Kathy? Very few. Of course, Decatur, Georgia is kind of a liberal city, but a town, not a city, a town. But very few flag-waving types. You would not find Neil Bortz coming to an event in Decatur. He lives on the other side of Atlanta, out where the rich white Republicans live. What else? All right, we mentioned the other day about Alabama Governor Bob Riley, who is a Christian Dominionist, Christian fundamentalist, and asking the residents of the state of Alabama to pray for rain, because like a lot of states here in the southeast, Alabama also is experiencing a drought. Well, a statement issued today from the American Atheists Incorporated Office of the Alabama State Director. It says, Alabama Governor Bob Riley's official proclamation and press release beseeching the citizens of Alabama to pray for rain on June 28th was a waste of taxpayers' time and money and probably violated the Alabama State Constitution. The state director for American Atheists in Alabama, Blair Scott, said, quote, instead of praying for rain, perhaps Governor Riley should be working on resolving the issues caused by the drought or making preparations for an extended drought or another drought in the future, end quote. And then they have a quote here from Terry Muniz, an atheist in Huntsville, Alabama, quote, Governor Riley needs to be taking care of water management and perhaps looking at new irrigation policies as well as water rationing or making it temporarily illegal to wash cars or water lawns. Those are legitimate ways to help in a drought, end quote. Riley's proclamation, which contains specific references to the Bible and personal beseeching to the Christian God, probably violates Article 1, Section 3 of the Alabama State Constitution, which states in part, quote, no preference shall be given by law to any religious sect, society, denomination, or mode of worship, end quote. Well, yeah, but here in the South, you know, I think all state constitutions here in the South have that. That's kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know, we've had anti-lynching laws on the books in the South since Reconstruction. So what, right? Back to Blair Scott, the head of Alabama, the Alabama chapter of American Atheists. Blair Scott said, quote, elected officials in the state of Alabama need to be personally taking care of the state's problems and not begging a non-existent deity to solve those problems. Governor Riley's proclamation amounts to nothing more than vote pandering because prayer does not work and will not end the drought. We need to consult a meteorologist. A climatologist, not invisible rainmakers in the sky. Obviously, Blair Scott said, if there was a God, it knows of the drought and has chosen to ignore it. End quote. I was kind of waiting for the somebody in the Freedom From Religion Foundation or American Atheists to make a statement about Riley. Oh, my God. Let's all pray for rain. Okay, let's pray for money. Let's pray for, let's see, no, that's the prayer of Jabez, that's right. That's another thing that you find here in the South. The Christian fundamentalists believe if you pray hard enough and handle enough snakes and go to the right meetings, God will love you so much he'll give you money. people keep asking why we stay here. One reason is the weather. The weather's great here. What was it today, Kathy? 87 degrees, low humidity.
Yes, but I think all the birds and bees are dying because there's literally no liquid in the air.
Well, that's true, too. But what did I hear? Phoenix, it was 116 today. In Las Vegas, 120-something. Sacramento, California, it was 100 and, I don't know, 80. Well, it's that damned jet stream. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Bob Geiger, who is a very good writer, writes at Huffington Post a lot, or you can go to BobGeiger.com? Can you go to BobGeiger.com? Yeah, BobGeiger.com. He mentions the fact that there are 25 Republican senators who voted during the Senate trial of Bill Clinton, voted twice guilty on Clinton, once for perjury, once for obstruction of justice. Now, remember what Clinton perjured himself for. None, not one of the 25 has said a word about the perjury and obstruction charges against this AIPAC apologist and spy who operated in Cheney's office, Irving Lewis Libby. Not one. Bob goes on to quote some of these guys from back in the day, back in 1999. Senator Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas, was just aghast. This is what he said. First of all, he was indignant as hell about having a high public official involved in something like perjury and obstruction of justice. Oh, my God, that could damage the very foundation that this country sits on, right? Here's what Sam Brownback said 8 years ago, you know, a million years ago. By his words and deeds, he chose to place himself above the law. By his words and deeds, he has undermined the rule of law in America to the great harm of this nation. By his own words and deeds, he has undermined the truth-finding function of the judiciary at great harm to that branch of government. By his words and deeds, he had done great harm to the notions of honesty and integrity that form the underpinnings of this great republic. We have lost many things over the past few months. Trust in public officials, respect for the rule of law, confidence in the truth of the White House public statements. But perhaps the most tragic loss has been the steady erosion of our societal standards. That's Sam Brownback, February 12, 1992. He got that read into the congressional record. Oh, my God, he was so indignant. Wayne Allard, Republican in Colorado. Here's what he said. The Constitution is what preserves the rule of law and guarantees that we remain a nation of laws, not of men. I hold the president to a higher standard because he is the chief law enforcement official in the nation. If he is above the law, then we have a double standard, one for the powerful
and one for the rest.
This sworn oath is central not only to our Constitution, but also to the administration of justice. Our legal system would not function without it. Oh, these hypocritical, supercilious buttheads. John McCain.
All of my life I've been instructed never to swear an oath to my country in vain. In my former profession, those who violated their sworn oath were punished severely and considered outcasts from our society. I do not hold the president the same standard that I hold military officers to. I hold him to a higher standard. Yeah.
Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson.
She gives a moving statement about how we should hope that history looks back kindly at how we observe the rule of law. Back in 1999.
I was reminded as well, however, that the laws of our country are applicable to us all, including the president, and they must be obeyed. The concept of equal justice under law and the importance of absolute truth in legal proceedings is the foundation of our system of justice in the courts. 100 years from now, when history looks back on this moment, we can hope for a conclusion that our Constitution has been applied fairly and survives, that we have come to principled judgments about matters of national importance, and that the rule of law in America has been sustained. Oh, my God. Hey, where are you people now, huh? George Voinovich
made a good case for impeachment when he said, I sincerely believe that this country can survive the removal of a popular president who has forfeited public trust, but our country cannot survive the abandonment of trust itself.
And as Bob Geiger writes, so, given all of that and the equally strident statements made in 1999 by so many of their colleagues, it's odd that there's not one similarly scathing statement about George W. Bush deciding to effectively pardon a convicted criminal because he's a loyal Bushy. Oh, and to keep him quiet, too. Let's not forget that, Bob, okay? You can read more of this at
BobGeiger.com. Here are the senators: Wayne Allard, Robert Bennett, Kit Bond, Sam Brownback, Jim Bunning, Thad Cochran, Larry Craig, Mike Crapo, Pete Domenici, Mike Enzi, Chuck Grassley, Judd Gregg, Chuck Hagel, Orrin Hatch, K. Bailey Hutchinson, Jim Inhofe, John Kyle, Trent Locke, Dick Lugar, John McCain, Mitch McConnell, Pat Roberts, Jeff Sessions, Gordon Smith, and George Voinovich.
Trust in God.
Jeff Sessions.
They're waving flags and guns and quoting from
Alabama. Where it never rains.
I hate Republicans, baby, I can't stand those Republicans. I hate the old Republican Party. Comrades are right.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
And who does he hate? He hates these right-wingers who are eating his country alive. That's who he hates. Elliot Cohen has quite a CV. He is the director of the Institute of Critical Thinking. He is the editor-in-chief of the International Journal of Applied Philosophy. He's also the ethics editor for Free Inquiry magazine and author or editor of many books in journalism, professional ethics, and philosophical counseling. And it goes on and on. He joins us now via telephone. May I call you Dr. Cohen?
Oh, I think Elliot is
Elliot will do.
Good surname.
All right. Thanks, Elliot. And my name's Mike. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Mike.
I have to say that in the short time that I've had the book and the time I've spent scanning through it, these are topics, what you are talking about here, what you're writing about here. The general overview is one that we've discussed on this program considerably, and I think most of the people who listen to this program are up to speed, especially on elements like Project for New American Century and the crossover, the interbreeding or the bleed through between that organization and national media companies, national defense contractors. One thing I didn't know, though, and maybe you can, this would be a good starting point. That list of approximately 25 people who put together PNAC and who prevailed on Clinton to invade Iraq a decade ago have so many of them have ties to the defense industry.
Yeah.
And I if you could expand on that a little bit.
Well, I think since you mentioned the defense industry is obviously the core of PNAC. They want to militarize, use military force to corporatize the world, you know, and to take over the world. And so it makes sense to have people who have ties to the Defense Department, and that's exactly what they do.
So these people are not just strictly political ideologues. These are war merchants of death, profiteers, however you want to call them.
Well, that's the thesis of PNAC. I mean, the idea is to use military force, and that's what they're doing. It's a blueprint. If you look at, for instance, the rebuilding America's defenses, the literature that they put out a little while back, about 2000, it was that whole project. That whole treatise is how to use the military to take over the world. And that's, it's the prevailing thesis. It's the essence of what they exist for. And what the chilling feature of it is that these guys are just not some, other one amongst many think tanks. These guys are the building blocks of the Bush administration.
Right.
It's scary.
It is indeed. There were two events regarding media that I think of course you get in very deeply into this in the book. The end of the Fairness Doctrine, when I started in talk radio, such a thing did exist. That ended, I believe, in 87, and thanks to Ronald Reagan. And then secondly, thanks to Bill Clinton, the end of, or I should say the beginning of media consolidation to the extent that we have, I believe the statistic now is five, possibly six companies, media companies, that are interlocked with other corporations that control about 90% of what Americans hear.
That's right, and you're right about Clinton. 1996 Telecommunication Act is exactly what he signed, and that's what started the ball rolling. And the Bush administration is running with it.
How, you know, in discussing this, and surely in writing your book, and I know you have a section called "What Now, Compatriots?" At the end of the book. What are we to do? What is somebody like me, a listener, those of us who understand the problem but don't have a clue as to the solution? What are we to do?
Well, it's not something that any individual by himself or herself can accomplish. It takes teamwork. And one of the things that you're doing and that in my way I'm doing and others is to get the word out. But one of the things that we really need to do is to stop relying on, you know, mainstream media. And start listening to India media as well as overseas media like The Guardian and the Canadian Broadcasting System and other venues like that give different perspectives. I mean, the average American gets their media feed from the nightly broadcast news.
Your careful laying out of how PR firms determine attitude where it concerns everything from invading a foreign country to how we look at health care. And by the way, with Michael Moore's movie out now and an awful lot of discussion focused on health care, I know these big PR firms that are so instrumental in continuing to keep us stupid in this country are going to go to work on the idea of health care and convince us, no, we don't want health care because health care is communist or worst. Now I understand, Elliot, that they're saying nationalized health care could hide terrorists.
Well, where the connection is, I must confess I don't
see. Well, the bureaucracy. This is at thinkprogress.org, I think, today or yesterday. Somebody at Fox News has come up with, or Fox Noise has come up with the elucidating fact here that because national health care would be a big bureaucracy that would make it easier for terrorists to operate within that framework because they know how to operate bureaucracies. I mean, it's insane. It's getting more and more and more insane. But you're writing about these PR firms who sell us war on the same basis they sell us shoes. I'm not sure how we counter that.
Well, I, you know, there has been some attempts to counter it. For instance, the attempt to build into media feeds for TV affiliates of the large networks this canned propaganda that's really put out by PR firms.
Mm-hmm.
That it was. The accountability office in the government accountability office stamped on that quickly and put some, I think, constraints on it. So there are things that can be done. I think getting back to what you're asking about, kind of a what to do list here. I think that people collectively can do something by joining activist movements. For instance, like Free Press, organization has been instrumental in doing things to stop at least for a temporary stopgap for media consolidation. I remember a few years back when 2003 when the FCC was promoting their liberalized media ownership, you know, making the cap larger so that they can these companies can own more and more of the media and cross ownerships.
Mm-hmm.
This organization went to bat against these companies and for to stop this progression, and they succeeded largely by getting the Congress to pass legislation that, while it didn't stop or halt the progression, it entirely it did some good. Mm-hmm. And then there's individuals who have gone to court to try to stop these kinds of things, and have been successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean it's possible, and I think people have to work together. They can't
right.
simply expect one person to carry the torch for everybody.
Well, I've mentioned many times in this program, I was a great fan of Saul Alinsky, and his catchphrase was organize, 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 and I think that especially applies now. This consolidation of media power, though, this is the part that is almost incomprehensible to me, how one can overcome that. I understand that it's not total yet, otherwise this program would not be on 25 radio stations and Sirius and soon XM and on the internet and so on and so forth, but it's getting damn close. The title of your book, The Last Days of Democracy, how much of that is hyperbole and how much of it is really true, Elliot?
Well, I could tell you that I think it's really true. I think, you know, if you look at what's gone on in this country in the past 8 years, operation of secret prison camps, torture of prisoners, violations of international law, the Geneva Conventions, the NSA program, warrantless spying. I mean, it goes on and on, and the breakdown of checks and balances in our system, and the demise of our Fourth Estate. I mean, all these things really. What does that mean? It means, we really don't have, we have a decidership, let's say that.
A decider.
We're on our way to dictatorship. All right.
I like that. Elliot, can you hold on a second?
Okay.
We have to do a break here. And,
all right,
we'll come right back. We're talking with Elliot Cohen. He's one of the authors, along with Bruce Fraser, of The Last Days of Democracy, How Big Media and Power-Hungry Government Are Turning America Into a Dictatorship. This book is published by Prometheus Press, Prometheus Books, I should say, which is a very good publisher. So you might want to get this. It's out in paperback, The Last Days of Democracy. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
And I read the front page, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
10 before the hour.
Sirens.
The name of the book is The Last Days of Democracy, How Big Media and Power-Hungry Government Are Turning America Into a Dictatorship. Two authors, Elliot Cohen and Bruce Fraser. We are talking with Elliot Cohen. Elliot, you talk about this in the book, and you just said it about reacting to this. The way to counter these last days of democracy is based on activism and, as you just mentioned before the break, independent news sources, peaceful assembly, free speech, critical thinking. Is it still possible to get involved in peaceful assembly to an extent that would influence others? As we all know, the idea of peaceful assembly has been, we have First Amendment zones now. You know, this country used to be, the entire country was a First Amendment zone at one time. And now we have these little walled off or fenced off areas. At what point do we stop with attempting to use the Constitution, which this cabal has utterly destroyed, and take to the streets in a non-organized way?
Well, I think we have to be careful, because what we may end up doing is creating exactly what, you know, we're fighting against, and that's the, you know, the breakdown of the rule of law. So I do believe that it's important to keep some sense of what our constitutional rights are, and to work within that framework. Now, if there's a deprivation of the constitutional rights, then there's civil disobedience, which means essentially that you're going to stand up for what you think is right, even though you may pay the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people need to keep a sense of what their constitutional rights are, what their human rights are, and to stand for those rights. Certainly there's no laws that are acceptable that would violate those, and that's where I think people need to come in. But I think there's an issue that's often glossed over by critics of media and government, and that's that we spend a great deal of time criticizing, you know, the media and criticizing government. But when we think about it, well, we do have this system of large conglomerates that are going to engage in quid pro quo with government. They're going to try to maximize their profits. Their main rule of essential rule for their existence is to maximize their profit. That's what they're going to do.
Right.
So they're going to go where the money is. They're going to do whatever maximizes their bottom line. And governments will try to control as much as they can. And since government has amazing, incredible control over media, they bring it into existence and they can cancel it. They have leverage over it. So we can't expect the government, and we can't expect the media, to always be so forthright and open to us. Not in the current way things are set up, at least. Some people need to realize that they can't be so gullible. And I think, you know, when we see all this gullibility going on, where people, so many people believed in the connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, and still do.
Mm-hmm.
We find that what we need is an education here about how to think and how to avoid the pitfalls of irrational thinking. We're constantly being bombarded with it, and it's important for people to take responsibility, not just to blame the media or to blame the government, but to actually take responsibility for what they believe. You know, if there's nobody willing to tango, there won't be a dance. And
well, that's true, and I like to put that idea forward on this program. We've talked before, there are four boxes for use in the defense of liberty or freedom, and they are in order: soap, ballot, mm-hmm. jury, and ammo. But when we are told or exhorted to use our constitutional rights, when you stop and think what has happened, the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, my God, a speedy trial by an impartial jury. George Bush has declared that null and void. The right of or the writ of habeas corpus, which has been destroyed. The Eighth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their that's excessive bail. Well, OK, cruel and unusual punishment. The Eighth Amendment, that's been gutted. It is understandable, isn't it, that a lot of Americans have just come to the point where couch this term. They're terrified of their own government. You know, the government should be afraid of the people, not the other way around.
Yeah, in a democracy.
It should, especially in one like ours, where we have a peaceful system, remove people and place other people in those positions. Very quickly, are you generally optimistic or generally pessimistic about the way things are going?
I'm rather disappointed. You know,
okay, that's somewhere in between, isn't it?
But I see what you're saying here, but I think we do need to do what we can, and mm-hmm. instead of simply, you know, taking a defeatist attitude and laying down and saying,
I agree.
It's all over.
I think part of the argument right now, though, is what is taking some action and not having a defeatist attitude. There's an awful, I'm sure you've discovered this or you know this from your work. There's a huge groundswell of rage out here. People who are just thoroughly angry at what has happened. And I hope, and I'm sure you do too, and I'm sure Bruce Fraser does, I hope that anger can be redirected or harnessed or focused in a way that's not going to, as you said, bring about the very thing we don't want.
So. Well, again, if anger is not rational, then it can. And,
that's true.
And the problem is that we're bombarded by these images of truth that are pseudo truth. They're, you know, we use the metaphor of the Platonic cave, and that we're largely dwelling in this pseudo reality cave where we think that.
Elliot, I hate to say this. We are flat out of time, but I hope we can talk again, all right? Thanks a lot for joining me tonight, okay?
Pleasure to be here.
All right, Elliot, thank you. Elliot Cohen, Bruce Fraser, the name of the book, The Last Days of Democracy. Buy it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Quick email here, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. I never say that enough, do I? 800-989-1480. This is an email from Gary regarding what I was saying right at the beginning of the program tonight about finding... my patriotic core, and how it's getting harder and harder to do that. Gary writes, "Dear Mike, I know what you mean when you ponder your newfound aversion to all the 4th of July patriotic hoopla. In the 60s and 70s, I was ashamed of our government for a lot of reasons, especially the war in Vietnam, but I was still able to feel pride in being an American. The vast majority of citizens and members of Congress were awakening to the realities of the corrupt and failed policies of our government and were making themselves heard. The mainstream media embraced investigations and spread the truth. The belief that better times were ahead was undeniable. Now I find the patriotic displays make me ill. Now I find that the majority of citizens sit on their butts with their minds on standby, and the bulk of Congress cowers in the corner afraid of alienating their corporate sugar daddies. Now I find that the mainstream media is owned by these same sugar daddies and mostly spread half-truths and lies... or nothing relevant at all. Paris Hilton, Anna Nicole. Now I find that my hope and pride of the good things we could do for each other and the rest of the world has been replaced by disbelief and disgust at what we are actually doing to each other and the rest of the world. And now I find I'm ashamed of America. I'm ashamed of the government. I'm ashamed of the people. We have become the true evil empire. I really do miss the pride I once felt in my country." Gary, yeah, and that's thanks, Gary. That is such a difficult position to be in. I feel the same way, and I tend to, you know, keep it to myself for the most part. You don't walk around your neighborhood or go visit your friends or go to the local bar or wherever you hang out and just say, "Yeah, you know, America really pisses me off. I'm just ashamed." But you feel it. I mean, you know, unless you believe in something that seems to not exist anymore in a concrete way, maybe it's good to continue to believe in the ideal. You know, that's what Dr. King did all those years that he was beaten and fire hosed and put in jail and cursed until he was assassinated. Gandhi the same way, to continue to believe, that there was a way out of the mess. A way out of the terribleness that they found. But it is so difficult, isn't it? unless you have the ability to totally fool yourself or the capacity to be fooled. And, you know, being an American, we all have that. That's part of being an American, to be fooled into believing. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but to be fooled into believing that we can remake ourselves. You know, they're always second act, sometimes third act, sometimes curtain calls. Whoever said there are no second acts is crazy. Of course there are. But isn't it getting a little bit hard? It is for me. Maybe I'm the only one that feels this, like, oh, God, please don't play the Star Spangled Banner. Please don't let me hear sung beautifully America the Beautiful. You know, it's the illusions, the pictures that those songs paint. Even the Star-Spangled Banner, even with all the rockets' red glare and the bombs bursting in air, I understand, you know, it's a very warlike song. But the images, the pictures, especially America the Beautiful, it's hard to listen to that kind of music or sing that kind of music if you're over a certain age and not feel yourself being pulled away from what you've come to realize is the truth and back into the illusion, back into the lie. And that's what it is now. And I think that's one of the main reasons I despise Republicans, because they have done this. Republicans have done this. You know, I said several years ago that the militia movement is these crazed ex-Klansmen. You know, they can't run around in sheets and lynch people anymore. So they, you know, they were talking about arming themselves to fight against the Democrats, which is such a joke, against the liberals. Liberals are going to come and rape our women and kill our children and take our goons. Oh, my God. And the only people who do that, of course, are Blackwater, and they're hired by Republicans. That's right, Republicans. But it's just difficult to whip up the that kind of warm, lovey-dovey feeling of being an American. I realize still there are still people who would give anything, and who do give anything, everything, to be here, to become a citizen. And I'll probably get a handful of emails here and say, well, if you don't like it, get the hell out. You know, okay, sure. But it is just difficult, that's all. And Republicans have just totally, totally murdered it. Destroyed it with their greed, their ugliness, their hatefulness, the divisiveness that they have pumped into the political system. Well, Rush Limbaugh still makes a lot of money, and Neil Bortz can rewrite history, and Sean Hannity will say anything that some Republican PR flack puts in his head, and Michael Savage is insane. So let's do some phone calls. Let's start with Alan, who's calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Just wanted to say hello, and a quick reminder that I was glad to actually say hello to you in Atlanta.
Believe it or not. When do we get together in Atlanta?
Lunchtime.
Oh, that Alan!
That crazy guy. Yeah, right here. Anyhow.
Oh, that's right. With Will from Michigan, and
a little mini reunion of people who.
Right, right.
Love
that's life. Right.
They're looking for solutions. You know.
That was a pretty good salad too. I don't know what you had. We had.
It was actually so nice. I didn't want to get into anything heavier and spoil anybody's appetite.
Yeah, I appreciate
that.
Let
it go at that. It was just a pleasant spending. You know.
I just wanted to sit there with you guys. For people who don't know, these are people that were here for the social forum here in Atlanta, and some of us just for the hell of it got together and had lunch. All right, now I know. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, while I was there, late at night, I saw the Deer Hunter on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you recall how that thing ended.
Oh, yes, I do.
I hadn't seen it for years, and everybody's sitting around after the funeral singing America the Beautiful as they're making eggs.
In the bar, in the pool hall, wherever they were. Yeah,
wherever that thing is. Out of nothing else to know what to do, like trying to hang on to some glimmer of hope or something, trying to reestablish or recreate a vision of a place they'd like to be in spite of all the horror they had seen. Well, you know, that was like 30 years ago, and here we are essentially in the same position, but worse.
Yeah.
And so now it's even harder to sing that and feel like there's some sort of hope. So I just like to point out a couple of things. What you talked about tonight with Elliot Cohen and stuff, I think was the most essential stuff we have to be talking about. And I'm so glad you're doing this. But the question is, what do we do about this, and what have we been doing about this? It's hard to know. I mean, can you imagine any of these subjects, PNAC or the media concentration or the effects that WTO and NAFTA have, as far as I am concerned, is creating the war policy? I think, you know, the war in Iraq is NAFTA by another name, basically. Which of these things were not known by our political leaders, by Clinton? Yeah. By Kerry, by Gore. So what I'm saying is the times are tough. The decisions are tough. I mean, the amount of choices we have left are few. If you don't want to go, as you say, into box four, as Elliot was saying, no, that'll just create the conditions that they need to be able to open up these detention centers that they're building, creating.
Right.
And so if we're trying to use whatever legal means are left, we have to understand that I can understand your ire. You say Republicans have done this to us, but they haven't done it alone. And until we understand the role that the two major parties have played together in this over the years, we will not have the courage to look at other solutions. And not any solution. I'm not saying that you can completely give up on all people who happen to be in the Democratic Party or in the same manner, there are some people still in the Republican Party, individuals who, you know, something good may yet come from them. But as far as institutions are concerned, I mean, I felt floored when I watched the debates in 2004 on TV. It was disgusting to me to think that, hell, I could have done a better job debating than John Kerry did. I would have stood up with a sheet of papers in my hand, even if they were blank, and said, Mr. President, do you know what this is? This is called the Project for the New American Century.
Sure.
And this points out everything, you know, everything we have done. This is a blueprint for every place we're today. Why was this not a topic of discussion?
Well, you're right, and you make a good point, and I get what you're saying, Alan, and I appreciate you checking in, pal. I hope to hear from you again, okay?
Okay, sure.
All right, bye-bye. Take care. And Alan's absolutely right. That would have been the perfect moment. And I wonder if any Democrat will... Oh, never mind.
We tend to forget. I mean, ours is a society where things are like instant, so therefore history almost is like so far back it doesn't count.
From every mountainside, let freedom ring. Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah, I was mentioning this to Elliot Cohen, our guest. This is from thinkprogress.org. I think this is from yesterday or the day before, or maybe today. Today on Fox News is Your World with Neil Cavuto. National Review Online columnist Jerry Bowyer attacked the Michael Moore movie Sicko and its positive portrayal of the healthcare in countries such as Britain and France. Mr. Bowyer argued that national health care systems are breeding ground for terrorists because they are bureaucratic. Here's what this freak said. A state-run health care enterprise is bureaucratic, and I think the terrorists have shown over and over again, whether it's dealing with immigration or whether it's dealing with airport security, they're very good at gaming the system with bureaucracies. They're very good at getting around bureaucracies. And if one of your guys is a jihadist, if one of your doctors is spending all the time online reading bin Laden fatwas, someone's going to notice that. But the National Health Service is more like the post office. You know, there's a lot of anonymity. It's easy to hide in the bureaucracy. Is everybody at Fox News absolutely insane? Is everybody at National Review out of their crawl spaces so far they'll never get back in? What is up with these people? That single-payer health care breeds terrorism. Oh, my God. I was reading something how the PR firms now, the national organizations like, AMA, the big pharma, the drug industry, the insurance industry, the healthcare industry, so-called, they're not healthcare, they're health expropriation, rip-off, gut-you industries. But they all are gearing up now to fight against Michael Moore because they understand what Michael Moore has done. Michael Moore has provided a counterpoint to the Harry and Louise commercials from 15 years ago. Remember those? Way back in 1993, 14 years ago. When Hillary Clinton was talking about national health care, and Clinton was talking about Bill Clinton and Al Gore, and all of a sudden you saw these Harry and Louise commercials. And people bought the Harry and Louise commercials, and the dumb bastards who bought into it, I'm sorry, but they are dumb, are still without health insurance. 15 years later, how does it feel, you morons? And your children don't have it either. So what Michael Moore has done, you see, he has forced dialogue in this country about national health care and about the sorry state of so-called health care in this country and how the pharmaceutical companies and the medical industrial complex are absolutely determined to keep it that way. Whether it means you have health insurance or your child dies of a brain infection, it doesn't matter. You're not getting it. You don't like it? Bite them. Bring it on. Whatever the hell the phrase is tonight, right? So the game has begun again. And watch for it to happen, especially with this ruling the other day by the Supreme Court that the so-called issue ads are now back on the playing field for these filthy, disgusting Republican candidates who are going to try to convince you to cut your own throat, set your own head on fire, kill your own children, eat your spouse, and cut off your feet, because that's the thing to do. Cause I know how, check my brain in, be an idiot, act meaning, stay ignorant, be remedial, wear the dust caps, loud children, cool like a hunchback, don't discuss things, shout the last word, put your good sense out the pasture, drop your IQ, that's what I do, my advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist, rocket scientist. Try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down. I want to hear you.
Here's a dreamer. Man had an idea. He didn't like the way the cotton shirts that he wore absorbed, his bodily fluids when he exercised, so he came up with a better product. It was so wonderful to sit with dreamers.
Oh, God. 26 before the hour, 25 before the hour. Speaking of dreamers, according to the Associated Press, Bush says Putin always tells the truth. That's right. This is from yesterday. Appropriate on Independence Day. Here's what the AP says. After hearing scathing criticism of the United States and its foreign policy from President Vladimir Putin for months, President George W. Bush praised Putin for his truthfulness and frankness at their meeting in Maine. Bush told reporters Monday, quote, "Here's the thing. When you're dealing with the world leader, you wonder whether or not he's telling the truth. I've never had to worry about that with Vladimir Putin. Sometimes he says things I don't want to hear, but I know he's always telling me the truth. End quote. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my. That's all I can say. This is from Dave in North Carolina. He writes, subject line is patriotism versus jingoism. He writes, hey, Mike, maybe it's because I've worn the uniform of the United States Marine that I can still embrace the beauty of my nation despite what the neocons are attempting to do to it. My misty eye doesn't arise at the sounds of Lee Greenwood or Kate Smith singing God Bless America, though I do still get a rise of pride when I hear the Marine hymn. Even the national anthem doesn't do anything for me, because as a Marine, I did not make an oath to an anthem or a pledge to a flag. These are meaningless symbols of my country as they have been co-opted by people who have no clue what it is that defines our country. As a Marine, I made an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. What makes me misty-eyed is knowing that every single elected official made that same oath. And yet, no sooner did they drop their hand and intone, "So help me God," it seems as if they immediately went to work finding any way they could to break that oath and defile that sacred writ they swore to defend. There's something very interesting about the oath, Mike. You only have to make it once. Unlike the pledge, which seems to require a daily reaffirmation, a swearing, every time the stars and stripes are hauled aloft, you only make the oath to the Constitution once. It is not a mere promise. It is a contract, and it has no expiration date. So all the patriotic songs in the world and all the accompanying emotionalism may make people feel patriotic, but it is only when you raise your hand that one time you demonstrate the responsibility that comes with being a patriot. And the moment your actions contradict that lifelong affirmation, there's only one word that is appropriate. Traitor. There are four boxes of freedom, Mike. Alas, I fear that the only way to live up to my oath is to begin opening up my stockpiles of the fourth. Ow! Semper Fi, Dave! No, I hear you. Damn. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that was the other thing that I thought about yesterday evening, with Molly sitting on my lap momentarily. She was tearing around that place like her pants were on fire. She's almost three. But when she did settle down before the fireworks, and she was sitting on my lap, you know, I couldn't help but wonder how somebody who served in the military 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, And knowing what they know things, especially if they were in combat, they know things that you and I, unless you've been there, which I have not, what you and I don't know. They know things we don't know. We can guess at, we can surmise, we can almost tune in, but they know things we don't know. They just do. They do. And I just wonder how, let me rephrase it. Okay, they don't know things that we don't. They know things from a different perspective. That's what I'm trying to say. Because I don't think you have to serve in the military to understand the sacredness of that oath to protect and defend the Constitution. But how must they feel having done something that people who don't go into the military haven't done, and that is give up certain aspects of your freedom and your life, become regimented for a certain amount of time in order to literally say, I'm going to put my physical self between those who would harm my country, my family, and my country and my family. That's the different perspective. Now, those of us who haven't served in the military, certainly who haven't served in a combat situation, can talk about this until we're blue in the face. But and we can be sincere. I'm sincere about what I say. I'm absolutely sincere. But there is a difference, isn't there? You do concede that. That's stipulated, right? There is a difference between people who have said, okay, I will give up my I don't give a damn kind of a style of freedom. I can do anything I want to in the United States of America. I can go here, go there. I can do anything I want to do. I'll give that up and allow myself to be regimented into part of a larger force. And if the time comes, then I will put myself between my country and my enemy. And then you have some thug or a collection of thugs like the Bush crime family who take advantage, who just spit on that oath and spit on the man and woman who took the oath. Almost literally spit on it. Corrupt it. Denigrate it. And force those people who did take the oath and are bound by the oath, unlike Bush and Cheney, who are not bound by anything. Force those people to go into a situation like we have in, for God's sake, Iraq. And that's not an impeachable offense. It's immoral, though, isn't it? Sure it is. Back to your phone calls. Luca is calling from Wyoming, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Luca.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Awesome. Radio show. A couple of things I'll talk about, but I'll on one. You were talking with Enid Cohen about media conglomeration.
Right.
And, you know, I grew up in Europe, so thanks to internet and RSS, I have a feed of all the major European newspapers and even some other countries.
Right.
So that's what I read all day long.
Right.
And a headline last night caught my eye. It said, Australia, we are in Iraq for the oil. Now, I have not seen this in any American newspaper.
They came right out and said it?
They did say that. It was actually, I have it right here. It's on Corriere della Sera, which is an Italian newspaper. One of the major two newspapers.
Uh-huh.
And it was said by the Minister of Defense. It said, the protection of the oil resources is one of the reasons why our troops are in Iraq. And the Laborist Party speaker responded that it took 40 years to tell the real reason why we are in Iraq. Now, no, this is not going to come out of the mouth of Bush or any one of his puppets. But, but you don't even see this news in the American papers, which is very sad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's way too much truth to expect
exactly.
From anybody in this country. In
I see this happening all the time.
Say it again.
I see this happening all the time. Every week there are so many news that get filtered. Mm-hmm. Not only there is conglomeration of news, there's also of media, there's also news mm-hmm. filtering all the way. It's tragic.
Well, we've talked about this before. I think anyone who lives in the United States, especially now, who truly wants to get the news, to get information about the events that are critical to a person's survival, short term and long term, you almost have to go to the foreign press. I go to the Middle East press, I go to the Asian press, I go to the European and the UK, and occasionally I still go to the New York Times and Washington Post, even though I realize what those two newspapers, what their primary objective is. So it's just something we have to do, and it's a damn shame, Luca. I'm, frankly, I'm over it. Hey, listen, I got to go. Thank you. I appreciate
okay.
you. Appreciate you checking in. All right, take care. Take care. Danny is calling from North Carolina, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Danny.
How you doing, bud?
I'm doing all right.
I wanted to talk to you about the media and the Republican Party, how the Republican Party has manhandled and...
Can you hold on? I'll tell you what, get your thoughts together, and we'll come back right after the break. Let me do this break, and we'll come back and finish up with Danny. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
jump into our bed.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Take a long walk to a company town. On what used to be solid ground. Nobody was ever gonna get sized down. Originally.
It's about 10 before the hour. We were talking with Danny, who has called in from North Carolina. Okay, go ahead, Danny.
Yeah, Mike, we don't hardly ever get anything straight on the media. We always get the right-wing side of the story. If we don't watch public radio or listen to public radio, we just get what the Republican Party wants us to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk into a man's house, and if he's got Fox Radio on or Fox TV, you got his IQ right there.
Yeah, yeah.
You do. You really do.
You really do.
I mean, that's a shame. I hate to say that about some people, but it's true.
Well, it's true.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, and you know their train of thought. And these high-tech companies, they're the same way. Some of these major companies are working for the government, one in particular,
mm-hmm.
and they got a heavy hand on the government. I mean, the government's got a heavy hand on them,
mm-hmm.
and they do a lot of watching and listening, and I don't know if y'all have what y'all have down there. What companies, what high-tech internet systems do you have?
We just about all of them are available. We have Bell South and Comcast and Cox and Earthlink and you know the usual gang of bandits.
Do you?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Bandits is about right. Bandits is about right. Yeah.
Well, I like your idea of checking with the foreign press, though. That's a good idea. Danny, I got to leave there. Thanks a lot, pal. Stay in touch, all right?
Okay.
All right,
check
man. I will. Check out the... As a matter of fact, Doug sent it to me. Here it is right here. Australia's defense minister said today that protecting Iraq's oil supplies is one of his country's motivations for keeping troops in Iraq, adding a new government justification for its Iraq mission. Defense Minister Brendan Nelson's inclusion of global energy security as a reason for keeping troops in Iraq is likely to add weight to war protesters' arguments that the 2003 U.S.-led invasion was more an oil grab than a bid to uncover Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction, which proved to be non-existent. And it goes on, and this is the... This is Associated Press, but it's in what paper is this? Damn, let me see here. It is ndtv.com. ndtv.com. So yeah, wouldn't it be interesting to hear one of these lying American bastards say the same thing, huh? Wouldn't it? Malachi in Canada sent me a link also. So it's out there. At least the Australians, the Australian government is not quite as neo-fascist as the Bush crime family, but by God, it's getting there, right? The reason we're there is to secure Iraq's oil fields. For whom? Oh, God. All right, Chris is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the Internet. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program. I thought we had a radio station back in Madison.
Oh, you do, but you're on tape delay, Mike. I can't talk to you then.
Oh, we're on tape delay. Okay, well, welcome to the program, Chris.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I got to hear you live, man.
Yeah, I hear that, yeah.
So, you know how we were talking about how angry people are, and sometimes it just gets, like, into despair and things, and people aren't sure what to do?
Right.
Well, you know, man, actually, after seeing Sicko, I was kind of feeling that way, too, and I got turned onto I got turned onto this thing. It's got this really cool slogan. It says, revolutions begin when we revolve. And the idea is like to turn ourselves around, turn
yeah.
what we're doing around and actually take action. And it's at this website, it's werevolve.com. It's like a simple little thing, man. They've got one thing going on right now where they're telling people to, if like you're healthy enough to do it, to just cancel your health insurance, man, because it basically, if enough people en masse do this, I think the idea is that it'll tell these greedy bastards that they can't use our health for profit, man.
That's a good idea. I went a very long period of time with no health insurance because I couldn't afford it and couldn't get it, and I had a kid at the time. That's when I was raising Chris, my son who's now 28, but from the time he was four until the time he was about 15, with a couple of short periods in there when I did have, like through CNN or through WSB radio, but we had long stretches where neither one of us had health insurance, and it was scary as hell. But when I think back, I probably would have been willing to have fought back. Since both Chris and I were fairly healthy, to fight back and just say, no, I'm not going to buy this stuff. There's some kind of a confrontation coming and regarding health care, since we don't have it in this country. And,
yeah, well,
you know, we have something else. We have some corrupt, filthy system, but we don't have health care.
Oh, man, we got profiteers that are saying, hey, look, as long as you pay your premiums like good little children and we don't have to pay out on you, then you're making us tons of money, and that's great.
And we'll keep taking your money.
Exactly. And so, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not one to tell you what you like or not, but I think you'd like this WeRevolve.com thing, man.
I like that. All right, WeRevolve.com, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see if we can crash the site now and get about 100,000 people to go there. All right, Chris, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Thanks
a lot.
Sure,
Mike. Hey. And keep the faith, man.
All right. Thank you. Keep the faith. Yeah, I haven't heard that for a while. All right. Let's take a look, Kathy, during the break. WeRevolve.com. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour, did you go to WeRevolve.com? Interesting site. Huh? Check it out if you haven't done so already. All right, let's go back to your phone calls, all right? You folks are doing great tonight, so let's keep them coming. Sam is calling from Florida. Sam's listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Mike, I'm here to encourage you tonight. I've been listening for a while, and you sound a little down, and it's so easy for that to happen when we have constant negativity and propaganda. But I encourage everybody, turn off your televisions, people.
That's true. No, I'm not down. I really am not. I got upset with myself for the reasons I explained after listening to all the patriotic music yesterday and not feeling anything other than kind of a hollow, empty feeling about those songs.
Well, I think your Marine fellow, you know, if everybody could go out and buy a copy of the Constitution and put it in their back pocket and carry it with them, I think it'd be a good idea. But he's absolutely right. You know, we don't put our hand on the Constitution to defend the Bible. We put our hand on the Bible to defend the Constitution.
That's true. Right?
And that's, you know, that's what we do. And I'm just going to encourage you, because there's more of us than them. You know all this already. There's more of us than them. And everywhere I go, I speak out. I mean, whether it's a grocery store, your car mechanic, you're going in to buy guitar strings, whatever, people say, how are you today? You tell them the truth. I'm mad as hell. You know, I'm mad as hell. We have criminals in the White House. How do you feel?
There you go.
You know, and people really want somebody to talk to. I mean, they're overwhelmed. I mean, they have it coming to, you know, at us in all directions. So there's more of us than them. It's up to us, and we're gonna take back Florida. You know, I'm down here in that military complex, and you know, they're not gonna do it. There's more of us than them, and I really do believe that we have hope for one great last wave of, you know, justice, equality, and a populist movement. I know there's a lot of people asleep, but I can't stop the hope. Because if we don't have a vision, I mean, we're going to perish.
Right.
You know, so we just got to hang in there and thank God for you and other people that call. And, you know, you can go down to your own county commission, your own city council. Everybody's got TV. Go get on TV for 3 minutes and talk about the war. Talk about the criminality in the White House. Find a way. You know, get with friends. You mean, go, if you have to join the Democrats, go join the local party and revolutionize it.
There you go.
You know? People have forgotten what a real Democrat is. You know, you lay down your life for justice and equality. I mean, that's just maybe something we're going to have to do. And you've got a little girl. Well, I've got a grandson. You know, we're doing it for them.
Right, absolutely.
You know, we're not doing it for us. We're doing it for them. And I think we have a window of opportunity. I really do. Something in my heart just tells me that these Congress people, if people can threaten congressmen's lives for immigration, they ought to be able to call them up and threaten them, you know, to impeach Cheney and get rid of Bush and, you know, get back our justice system and kick these people out.
Well, let me ask you something, Sam. Do you ever feel like Charlie Brown when he's getting ready to kick the football and Lucy says, come on, this time I'll really hold it for you? And every year she tells him, she swears she's going to hold it for him. One year she even said she showed him a signed affidavit. And he came running down to kick the football, and she pulled it away and said, oh, this is funny. The signed affidavit wasn't notarized. But don't you ever feel kind of like Charlie Brown with Lucy holding the football?
Actually, you know, I have a new definition of winning down here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new definition of winning. As Orwell said, you know, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Right.
Well, our winning, these days winning, is, Mike, is what you're doing. We're winning by telling the truth. We're winning by, you know, talking to the person in the grocery store, talking to your car mechanic, talking to your hairdresser, getting five people to go see Sicko with you. You know, that's winning.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can take this back. I know it sounds impossible, but what else will we do if we don't hope and we don't fight? I mean, this is the big one.
That's true.
Fight of our lives.
That's very, very true, very true. And I agree with that. I apologize for sounding down in the dumps so often. I guess what it is just unexpressed anger.
Yes.
I get very pissed off on this program, and sometimes my language reflects that, and sometimes the intensity of what we say on this program reflects that. But you know, it's one thing to be angry at something. I haven't given up because, you know, I've got grandchildren too.
Yes.
And I don't want my grandchildren or my 3-year-old to be handed something because I didn't make the right decision that is going to make them sick and deny them freedom and the right to live a life that I could live. An awful lot of people worked to hand me the life I had. So no, I'm right with you, Sam. I'm right with
you. Okay, good. Well, keep in mind, there's a lot of real good veterans out there, and they know what's up too. You know, and
they're
on our side. Okay.
That's
so,
right.
So if we need economic collapse to happen, I encourage people to, you know, go to thrift stores. Don't consume as much. Try to get out of debt and find a seed that you can grow in your own backyard. I got to tell you, I grew a cantaloupe, and I'm growing some peanuts. And I can't tell you how much joy I just get out of going in and seeing that little seed in that ground, watching it come up.
There you
go. We have to remember that, and we can have a more sustainable life. We just have to make every choice and move forward and kick some ass.
I hear you.
Which is what we're going to do down here in Dunedin, Florida, in St. Pete.
All right. Thanks, Sam.
Okay.
I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Yeah, we shop at, what's the store that you buy so many things at? Last Chance? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's my favorite store is the thrift store. It's where I get a lot of Molly's clothes, mm-hmm. where I get a lot of my clothes.
Consignment shops.
You're not so crazy about it, but toys, books,
mm-hmm.
Pillows.
Well, I'm not crazy about it because I can never find the right size jeans. All the good jeans are gone. But the garden this year, look at this stuff growing out here in the garden.
Upside down
tomatoes.
Yeah.
They're all over the place.
I'm going to have to learn how to pickle cucumbers.
You've already got about 40 cucumbers hanging off those vines out there. And what else do we have?
All the single women in my, never mind. What else do we have? We have bush beans, and we have bell peppers, and we have...
Squash?
One giant squash.
That sucker's huge.
Yeah. And flowers.
Yeah, so, you know, Sam's right. Two generations ago, they called them victory gardens, and we're doing those things. We're doing the best we can. It's not just bitching and complaining on this program every night. It really isn't. As far as I'm concerned, I try to keep these ideas instilled in my adult children. And my grandchildren, well, not the grandkids yet. I don't have that much contact with them, but with Molly, certainly with Molly, we've laid in the groundwork. We're already teaching her that you don't call somebody a son of a bitch if you're really angry. You call them a Republican. No, just kidding. Now, I hear you, Sam. Wait till these tomatoes come in. All right, back to your phone calls. Jack is calling from Arcata, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Jack, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going fine.
Yeah, you know that phrase, Republican SOB, is kind of redundant.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, sure it is. Speaking of these Republicans, I mean, we all got to pressure our congresspeople and our senators to support Dennis Kucinich and House Resolution 333 to impeach Cheney. Cheney thinking he's the fourth branch of government. No, he's a fourth branch of government. We the people can do without Mike. I mean, Cheney is an idiot. And he's got to go.
He's also, he's even more evil and more of a destroyer of American values, as we were taught them in school, than Bush.
That's right. And Cheney is the guy, after all. Remember on 9/11, the military was running mm-hmm. exercises, simulating, planes being hijacked and flown into certain targets on that morning, which helps explain why a lot of those Air Force jets did not get around to intercepting any of those planes on that day. And it was Cheney, after all, who was running this stuff. So we need to ask what Cheney has been up to with Halliburton, with the Energy Task Force, with the war. He lied about the whole thing about weapons of mass destruction. How can this guy remain in power and say he's above any kind of review by Congress or any public scrutiny? The guy thinks he's a dictator, and, you know, that's a call for impeachment right there. Why
is he still there? Probably because we leave him there. Thanks, Jake. Appreciate you checking in.
Host for a Pience, Friance future, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, a couple of quick emails here. This is from Kathleen. Hi, Kathy and Mike. I just want to point out to everyone that universal health care, the kind of health care that makes it mandatory to purchase health care, like it is now mandatory to purchase car insurance, is going to put us in a much worse situation because it will still involve purchasing insurance. Of course, it would come in various levels of quality, so they would have the real cheap stuff like liability, which would be kind of minimal coverage. It would get you into quarantine if you were contagious, but not offer you anything other than separation from the rest of the population. That would be the lowest level you could get without going to prison. So we would be having to purchase whatever we could afford. Get my drift? I think we better get real crisp and clear about the difference between single payer and universal. And Kathleen makes a good point here. Universal health care is not what anyone who believes that American public should have health care, health coverage available. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about single payer, and that is where the government, this is government, this is like Medicare. It's government-sponsored, government-handled health care. The cost of administering Medicare run about 3%. The cost that is built into health insurance runs about 19%. And the difference is, well, I'm not going to get into it tonight, but the difference is monumental. We have a system in this country that is perverse. It is unfair. It gouges the hell out of everybody. If you stop and listen to the stories of people who have just been beaten into a bloody pulp because of their lack of health insurance and the fact that they can't get it, how many bankruptcies are caused by unpaid medical bills that are astronomical that can't be handled? It's an outrage. But it's not universal health care. That's garbage. That's like car insurance. Forget it. And you know what a success that's been, right? Huh? Have a couple of claims on your universal car insurance and find out what happens to your premiums. This is from Barbara. Subject is Obama. Mike, just had an interesting phone conversation with the person representing Barack Obama regarding the Democratic caucus here in Nevada in January. They probably purged me from the rolls of people to call after 25 minutes of hearing me rant about this criminal Bush cabal. In response to my vociferous and repeated demands that impeachment proceedings be instituted, the caller said, I shouldn't look for Obama to get on that bandwagon, that he felt it was a bad precedent, that it was a mistake when they did it to Clinton. When I angrily asked if he considered the situations analogous, he said no, and that they feared if impeachment proceedings were brought against Bush, then every president would have to deal with impeachment proceedings. Oh, my God. So there I think you have the answer to why impeachment is off the table. Our representatives in Washington view the transgressions of the Bush debacle as venal and not qualitatively different from whatever Picadillo subsequent presidents might prove guilty of. And then Barbara ends with an epithet. I used to sometimes say that on the air, Barbara, but I've decided not to say it anymore. Thanks, Barbara. Back to your phone calls. Let me see here. Joe is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
How are you, Mike?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Okay, that's a laugh.
Yeah,
that,
really.
That every president hereafter would probably have to go under impeachment. Somebody was talking on the radio today about, she was a lawyer, she was saying that the reason why Bush commuted Libby's sentence was because in case he had to go in front of a hearing, one of Conyers' hearings, he could take the Fifth Amendment and wiggle out of having to tell the truth. And that's why he didn't pardon him. He commuted the sentence instead of pardoning him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm sure you're right, Joe, and the person who made the statement is right. And I'm also sure there are other all sorts of reasons why these contortionist bastards did this. Did you also hear that today? Remember a couple of days ago when Tony Snow White House press secretary was talking about, oh, my God, a $250,000 fine, like that was some big deal to somebody like Irving Libby. Did you hear that today he wrote a check for it?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Out of the Treasury, right?
That's it. I got to leave it there. Thanks, Joe. Okay, I appreciate your call. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Because they think we're fools. So fool the boys. I'm trying not to laugh. The man is laughable. Boom time for Wall Street. They want you to believe the unbelievable. They say we should accept the unacceptable. The pious and the hip. So hypocritical.
We live in a global world, and that creates uncertainty in some. I understand that.
A global world? Oh, my God. He is so stupid. All right, back to your phone calls. Robin is calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hey, Robin, welcome to the program.
My God, how you doing, Mr. Malloy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, as perturbed about things as you are at times, sir.
I hear you.
My God, you know, it's amazing all the people that call in, and they have so many of them have such fine answers for all the troubles that we're faced with. I'm perplexed, as I'm sure you are, what are we going to do about all this? Just it's so troubling. You know, I heard the gal talking earlier to you and saying you sound a bit down in the dumps. Well, I can understand why. If you love your country and you're aware of all the things that are going on in it, you know, it's like a mountain above us. And how do we get over it? You know, I just...
Well, I think the answers are there, and this is what I tell myself on a regular basis. And I still believe it. I think I still believe it. And that is to continue to organize, continue to work, continue to try to get the truth out, and realize that, you know, we've faced some pretty adverse situations in our past.
Yeah.
And we just have to get through this. Just have to make this go away and not get back to where we were. I don't believe ever in going back, but to move forward.
No.
We've got to work on universal health care. We've got to make sure that Republicans never, ever, ever again can somehow seize power and corrupt our system to the extent that they have this time.
Mm-hmm.
And right. That's going to take a lot of work. So, you know, I'm ready to go.
You know, I'm afraid that's part of the thing that's a little scary for me, though, is I think that they're probably saying, yeah, well, that's exactly what they think they need to do to organize and get it together. And I think that they're just one step ahead of us and always will be. I'm just afraid of that. You know, if I might quote General Douglas MacArthur, he said, I'm concerned for the security of our great nation, not so much because of any threat from without, but because of the insidious forces working from within. You know, he could see into the future. I would love to be able to speak to him from the grave, because I'll bet you he would tell us one thing, and that is to do what he was trained to do on our own soil. Right.
Well,
here.
Yeah, probably.
That's the answer.
Probably so.
I'm afraid it is, you know.
But to any Republicans who want to challenge the fact that I'm going to be part of the cadre that kicks their ass, I have one thing to say: bring it on.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, Mike, it's not heading in a good direction. You know, yeah, I don't think there's any government that's you know, I mean, they all run their courses and then they die out, just like we have a cancer here that's just eating our country up, and it's called these politicians, and it's just so discouraging. What do these poor children think about when they hear about what's going on? And unfortunately, though, they're not being fed the information that's available to, say, such as yourself, you know, or people who get into man, I just wish our investigative reporters were doing more, but they're being attacked, and I just, you know, there's so much propaganda. It's just like, how do you get through all of this, you know? And I believe too that, you know, I think there's in part the reason why these radio talk shows are allowed to go on is because our government knows, hey, this is like a venting place for the American people. They can go there and vent, and then they'll just kind of just fade back into the background because they've had a chance to do that, and now they'll be okay. That's, you know, that.
They may think that, but I don't think that's the case. Robin, let me leave it there. I appreciate you checking in. I don't think that's the case. I think that when people call this program and let their feelings out, what happens almost immediately is other people who are listening to the program think, by God, that's exactly how I feel, so I'm not out here by myself. I'm not the only one who sees the corruption, who sees the poison that these Republicans have brought to our political system and our country. And I think once you realize that, then the inclination to take it to the next step, which is organizing to stop this nonsense, is easier. It comes easier. You know, everybody wants to do something. And as Elliot Cohen pointed out tonight, you know, you can't do anything on your own. Those days are over, unless you want to be a John Wilkes Booth or something like that. And that usually doesn't work anyway. So people have got to realize, and I think that's one of the functions of this program or other liberal talk shows, and not just this one, is that we're not alone. Sam said that, you know, there are more of us than there are of them. Well, I tend to agree with that, but it seems like they control most of the assets. So we just have to be more creative, which is not difficult. There's no such thing as a creative Republican. They just don't exist. They are lockstep, goose-step, mindless automatons who do what they're told. Creativity, and that, by the way, is their strength and weakness. Creativity is not what they're about. Not what they're about. They have a couple of people who believe in creative destruction, like Karl Rove. But as far as creative construction, no, it's impossible. They can't do it. Republicans are inherently death worshippers. They are part of a huge death cult. And they fear their own deaths, but they want to bring on death for everyone else. So it's not too difficult to not be included in that kind of a sickness. It really isn't. So the you know, the rage fatigue and all the stuff we've talked about on this program over the months, is part of what inspires me to just say, no, hell no, hell no. You know, I'm not going to let these thugs, and I don't care who the thugs are, if they are easily identifiable thugs like all Republicans, or not so easily identifiable like some Democrats, I don't care. You know, to quote our illustrious leader, bring them on. Oh, God, I all of a sudden I feel guilty when I say that. Because when he said it, we had 200 dead Americans. Now we have 3,600. Pig. What a pig. Suzanne is calling from Los Angeles, obviously listening on the Internet. Well, I guess you could be listening on Sirius, but hey, Suzanne.
How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I had to jump in here with the recent Sicko movie. When I walked out of the theater, these double-sided flyers were being passed out that you can cut off the bottom and send into, I'm calling from Los Angeles, to the California School Employees Association regarding Senator Kuhl's Senate Bill 840 here in California.
Mm-hmm.
And she has it really laid out nicely. She's got Schwarzenegger's ideas, Nunez, our speaker, and mm-hmm. then hers. But now, when I heard you earlier talking about the difference between single payer and universal,
right?
They're claiming that this is a universal single payer system.
You know, I don't know what the law that you're talking about in California really consists of, but be careful because universal. Most states have universal insurance for cars, which means you have to have car insurance, which means you're at the total mercy of the insurance companies. Now they do compete to some degree for your money, but go ahead and have an accident, even if it's not your fault. Now, even if you're hit in a parking lot, your car is, I had this happen to me, your car is parked. Some moron backs into you and does $1,800 worth of damage because they put a tiny dent in one of your door panels, a tiny dent. And go ahead and file the claim. See, we carry $500 deductible. The minor stuff we'll take care of. $1,800 worth of damage, that is astonishing to me, and our insurance rates go up. So, no, universal health care, health insurance is not the answer. It's got to be single payer. And the single who does the paying is the government. And we are the government. So we all pay in, just like we do with Medicare. Anybody who works, there's a deduction on your paycheck for Medicare. It's right there. Everybody pays in. And then when they need it, everybody gets the medical care that they need. Single payer is the only answer, Suzanne. But I know you know that.
Yeah, it's so popular. Everywhere I go, every liberal group that I walk into is talking about we've got to get behind this. There is a website, too. It's onecarenow.org. It's onecarenow.org. I'm gonna look at it much more closely before. I've got about 50 of these flyers.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to pass them out, but now I...
Well, just make sure that the language in the proposed legislation in California is really single-payer, because there's going to be a lot of guerrilla warfare as well as upfront warfare by the health industrial complex in all its many forms to stop single-payer. Suzanne, I got to leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you calling. Take care. We'll be back, Truth Seekers. Stay with us. Okay, during the break here, I went to this website Suzanne mentioned, onecarenow.org. Yeah, this is single payer. This is a good idea. Senate Bill 840 in California. They use the term universal and single payer kind of interchangeably. The insurance industry does not, so be careful. But onecarenow.org. From a quick perusal here, seems to be exactly what we're talking about. So this is Suzanne. It is it's a good one. Right near the end of the on the main page of the website, it says why single payer is the answer, and then they say only a universal single payer system provides true universal health coverage. And yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, this is the real deal. This appears to be the real deal. OneCareNow.org. And since so many progressive ideas come from California and then roll across the rest of the country, I hope this... I hope you all have a good debate about this in California and that it does somehow manifest. So again, just looking at it very quickly, this is exactly what we're talking about, single payer. And they use the term universal because it would be available to everybody. When the insurance industry or its shills in Congress talk about universal, they don't necessarily and very seldom mean if ever, means single payer. Thanks to the crew again tonight, Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your calls at KPHX in Phoenix. Also, our senior correspondent, Chris, in Minnesota. Billy Foster, the moderator at the NovaMradio.com chat room tonight. And thanks to Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Back to your call. Spitfire is calling from Anaheim, California. Hey, Spitfire.
Hey. Long time no hear.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't have your phone number.
Oh, you want it?
don't say it.
Yeah. On the Scooter Libby thing, did you get my email?
Probably. I've gotten,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you get flooded. You don't get a chance to read all of them.
I really don't. Unless it's...
That's why I try to keep mine to one line or less.
Yeah, if somebody just sends me a link to something, I may or may not get to it. If somebody sends me a personal note, I try to read it every time, yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, anyway, what I said was, I also sent it to Bart Kopp. He'll probably put it on his side.
Yeah.
I said that we should protest by riding mopeds to work and call ourselves scooter commuters.
No, I missed that. Scooter commuters.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Bart Kopp will put that up.
Probably.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, I've been a truth seeker for a long time, and there's some fundamental truths that I have learned.
Yeah.
One of them is that basically there is no such thing as this international terrorist organization called Al-Qaeda.
That's true.
We are in a battle for civilization, but the rest of the civilization is sitting this one out.
That's true.
Another thing is that... you don't have to worry about your show.
Yeah?
Because 6 months into a Democratic administration, the powers that be are going to nuke Wall Street.
They're going to nuke Wall Street?
Yes, it will serve two purposes. One, it will basically make it so that the Republicans can say, see, we told you only Republicans can keep you safe. And number two, it will cover up the fact that their economic policies destroyed the economy.
Yeah.
They'll blame it on the destruction of Wall Street as to why the economy collapsed.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will have the cure.
Yeah.
Tax cuts for the rich.
Tax cuts for the rich. Always. Do you have athlete's foot? Tax cuts for the rich will cure you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a problem with China? Tax cuts for the rich will cure you.
Yeah, it clears up pimples, halitosis.
Are you losing your hair? Tax cuts for the rich will take care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Oh, well.
But, yeah, happy birthday.
Thanks, Spitfire, and good to hear from you. Don't be a stranger. Take care, pal. We'll talk again. That's Spitfire. Mike is calling from Seattle, listening on KPTK. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, hi there. Mike Trusticamalaw. I am truly honored.
My pleasure. Are you going to come to the gig on Saturday the 14th?
I didn't get a ticket, but I'm going to see if I can figure something out.
All right. Well, you can always, you know, just kind of come up through the basement or something, right?
Well, yeah, that actually, yeah. Anyway, a couple of things here. I know it's almost the end.
Yes.
I have group health here in Seattle, and I'm damn happy with it. I don't care what you call it. They're bloody good.
What do you have?
Group health. They're in Seattle. They're like an HMO of some kind. They got a bunch of hospitals and doctors.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
You know, I just, you know, when I got a problem, I call them up. And right now, actually, I got a temperature of 103, and I'm a little grumpy. So if I screw this up, don't worry.
Okay.
But I listened all afternoon and yesterday part of the time, and everybody called in about impeachment. Impeachment's a bunch of bunkum. It's crap. Nobody's going to do that. I mean, Prez Cheney could be standing over a dead body, caught on tape. Briscoe and Green could have him dead to rights, and the Dems on the jury would be afraid to vote to convict.
you're probably.
However,
right.
I've got a guerrilla idea, and I wanted to ask you. It's half-baked, and it's getting nuts.
Very quick. I got 30 seconds. Go.
Okay. What if somebody does a bunch of, like, 20-second commercials, and it sort of goes, Prez Bush said he would... restore truth and honor to the presidency. On day one, every Fleischer came in and lied about Clinton. It said Clinton trashed the White House, stole the silverware.
Right, right.
Won.
Right.
The truth is this, blah, blah, blah. And so, Mr. Bush, how come you've never had Ari Fleischer account for that. Why did you allow Ari Fleischer to trash Bill Clinton for 3 months?
That's a good idea. That I like that. I like that, Mike. We'll talk about it again because I'm out of time, pal. Thanks for participating in the program tonight, however you did that. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Oh, my God, tomorrow's Friday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.